Hello and welcome to In the Booth on Sportsnet 650, your official home of the Canucks. I'm Brendan Batchelor, as always, joined by Randeep Janda. And Randeep, In the Booth is brought to you by Bells and Whistles.
That's right. Catch all the action, hockey, football, soccer, and more with Happy Hour Pints for $6.75 at 3296 Fraser Street, just off Kingsway, right in the Fraser Hood. Bells and Whistles, hit it up. They've got a lot going on with the big game coming up. They've got hockey, you name it, Four Nations Face-Off as well. The place to watch sports with the sound on.
And the Canucks and Maple Leafs on Saturday night. Of course, we'll have that here for you on Sportsnet 650 as well. And you'll have it on Hockey Night in Canada, Punjabi. Randeep, we'll get into a little bit of a preview of that game coming up in a couple of moments. But don't look now, the Canucks have won back-to-back games, albeit not in the most convincing fashion on Thursday against the Sharks, but they don't always ask how, they ask how many, and the Canucks were very good on home ice against the Avalanche in that shutout victory for Thatcher Demko. Maybe less convincing in San Jose, but Demko kind of held them in, and they managed a way to get it done in overtime with Drew O'Connor on the penalty shot.
Well, absolutely, and you know, this is a team that, of course, you had an opportunity to maybe kind of dominate the San Jose Sharks early in that game. It didn't happen. They did get that goal. But the most important thing is, are you getting progress from this team? Are they stepping into the right direction? And as you mentioned it, you know, now they're in a playoff spot. They've got the second wild card as of right now. And on Saturday night, the Canucks have the Leafs. The Calgary Flames have the Seattle Kraken. We'll see how that plays out. But it's not only about the team results. It's about specific individuals are starting to step up. And Thatcher Demko, to me, is the one to watch right now, because two straight games, he's allowed, you know, just one goal in the game against San Jose, zero goals in the one previous to that against Colorado. He's starting to look like the Thatcher Demko of old. Is he there officially? No, I want to see a larger sample size. But this is a huge story for this team, as their number one goaltender is looking like a number one.
And as we look ahead to the game on Saturday against the Leafs, I think it's going to be really interesting to see who starts in that game, because you're right. Demko's had back-to-back good performances. Do you let him continue to roll? At the same time, Kevin Lankinen shut out the Maple Leafs a few weeks back when Vancouver was in Toronto. So I could see things going either way in terms of which goaltender they turn to on Saturday night. And ultimately, that's a pretty good situation to be in, where you don't know who's going to start. But either way, you probably have confidence that whoever goes into the crease can get the job done with the way they've been playing lately.
Yeah, it's an interesting scenario where Kevin Lankinen, outside of Quinn Hughes this season, has probably been the Canucks' most valuable player in terms of making an impact and keeping the team in games and winning games early on in the year. But now you've got Thatcher Demko, who could have had back-to-back shutouts if it wasn't for a Tyler Toffoli goal with 90 seconds left in that game. And you don't want to go away from a hot goaltender, especially when there are no back-to-back situations. So, Batch, I would go back to Demko. I think he's feeling it. Of course, you don't want to overwork a player. But remember, this is the final game before the Four Nations face-off. I'm saying ride the hot hand, go back to Demko.
And Rick Tocchet, when I asked him about how to approach these final two games in the pregame interview before the game against the Sharks, he talked about emptying the tank because you're getting a bunch of time off. So I'm sure that applies to the goaltenders as well. We'll have to wait and see who starts with the Canucks facing the Leafs on Saturday. Another big question around this team, and as of the time of recording, we don't have an answer to it yet, Randy, is Quinn Hughes. Will he be able to play against the Maple Leafs? And then the bigger overarching question, will he be able to go to the Four Nations face-off and play for Team USA? Should he go? Should he rest and worry about the stretch run for the Canucks? Everybody's got an opinion on this. And we were talking before we started recording about maybe attacking this from the way we would approach it individually if we were in Quinn Hughes' shoes. So looking at all the factors, Canucks now back in a playoff spot after the win over San Jose on Thursday. But you know, Quinn Hughes would absolutely love to represent his country at this event. Put yourself into his shoes. What would you do in this scenario?
Yeah, it's such a tough one, because this is a guy that has been wanting to represent his country for such a long time. This is the opportunity to have, you know, his brothers and his family involved. This is going to be on the East Coast as well, where they reside. So there's so much going on here. But Batch, I go back to the, if this was the hand injury only, I think it's a very easy decision. He's shown that he can be elite and the league's best with that injury, managing it. This new added complication of, we saw him against Dallas. He did not look right in that game. His stride was nowhere near what it's normally. It looked very labored. We don't know the actual situation of the injury and where it's at right now, but I lean towards, and I know this is not going to be a popular take because you feel bad for the player, but I would say if he's not able to play and he's not feeling right before the Four Nations face-off, if he can't go against Toronto, I wouldn't want him there. I wouldn't want to go. As a player, of course you want to go, but if I'm a member of the team or of the coaching staff or the management, saying we can't send you, you know, basically with a new injury, but without, you know, the conversation hasn't been made public. I'm sure there's going to be a pretty lengthy conversation between player, coach, and management, and a lot of it depends on how he's feeling. But if you had to ask me right now with the information that I have, I'd say no. I'd say sit back, get right for the stretch of the season that's going to be really important for this team. And it could be as simple as, you know, if Quinn Hughes is healthy, you make the playoffs. If he's not and he doesn't get that rest, maybe you don't.
Yeah, well, and, you know, we have to go back to the old Jim Benning. We don't have all the information here. The only thing
for
we
sure.
do know, or at least has been reported, is that it's an oblique injury potentially. So, you know, depending on the severity of that, you're looking at something that could affect him over the longer term. You certainly don't want him to aggravate it at the Four Nations faceoff. But, you know, I'll play devil's advocate here. There's another way to look at this, which is Canucks have struggled this year. It's not like they're a division winner. They're unlikely to have home ice in the first round of the playoffs or anything like that. You know, they're maybe moving more core pieces than they already have with JT Miller going out of town. The most important games Quinn Hughes might play in this year could be the games at the Four Nations faceoff in the first true best-on-best tournament that we've had in a long time. And I would totally understand if Quinn Hughes says, I don't care if I'm banged up, I don't care if I'm hurt, I'm going to find a way to play for my country. And, you know, take yourself out of it as a Canucks fan or someone that follows the Canucks and thinking about Vancouver's results down the stretch. But think of yourself as someone that is a fan of Team Canada, let's say, or Team USA, or whatever country you're from or you support that you're listening to our show here. Sidney Crosby's going through the very same thing. He, as of the time of recording, is not expected to play for the Penguins on Friday night. He has been on the ice and skating. You know, as someone that wants Team Canada to do well at this tournament, I want Sidney Crosby on my team. I want him to play. Now, that's a different situation because the Penguins certainly aren't going to be as competitive down the stretch as the Canucks are, we hope. But this is not a cut and dry, okay, don't go play at this tournament. You've got to prioritize your NHL team first. There are a lot of factors on top of the fact that we don't have all the details about the injury either.
Well, that's key. And I guess the other element to this is when we think of Quinn Hughes or Sidney Crosby going to, you know, an international tournament and playing for their respective team, we're thinking top pair defenseman, we're thinking top line center. But if you are in a reduced role because of an injury, you know, does that make you, are you playing 20, 25 minutes a game? Like, a lot of this is going to be dependent on what the condition is, and is the player okay to take a slightly reduced role, right? Like, if they are not at their best, if they're at 80% or 85, 90, I don't know what that number is, Batch, but we conventionally think, hey, Sidney Crosby is going to be the top two center on this team, but let's say, you know, maybe he's not capable of playing that many minutes, or the same thing with Quinn Hughes. I'm kind of worried to say, hey, 25 minutes a game, 23 minutes a game for Quinn Hughes might be a lot if you're banged up, and especially if you're not playing NHL hockey. I think the one thing we have to consider is there's a lot of good players on these teams, and if a player is banged up or not 100%, they won't be going full 25 minutes. There is more leeway with the level of player at the international level to say, hey, Quinn, we understand you're not in an ideal situation. You're going to effectively play second pair minutes or third pair minutes because we understand your situation. That's one thing that I think the coaching staffs with Mike Sullivan on Team USA and, of course, with Team Canada, which Rick Tocchet is a member of that coaching staff as well, those are things that they're going to have to gauge. And there might be a little bit of conversation between teams and national teams to say, hey, our guy's coming, but hey, don't ride him too hard.
Yeah, ultimately, though, if you've got arguably the best defenseman on the planet on your bench available to play, for a lot of coaches, the temptation would be too strong. And even if they say, oh, yeah, we'll deploy you in second pairing minutes, if you're down a goal in the third period against Canada, Quinn Hughes is going to be on the ice. That's just the reality of it. And that's what makes this an even more complicated conversation as well. So we'll see how that plays out. We'll see if Hughes is able to play when the Canucks take on the Maple Leafs on Saturday. All right, we're going to hit a break early because we've got a ton of questions in the mailbag that we want to get to. We'll do that on the other side right here on In the Booth on your official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to In the Booth on Sportsnet 650, your official home of the Canucks. Brendan Batchelor and Randeep Janda with you. If you've missed any part of the show listening on the radio, it lives as a podcast as well on the Canucks Central podcast feed. Make sure to subscribe to that. You get the Daily Show with Sat and Reach every weekday. You get every Canucks postgame show with Sat and Bick, and you get In the Booth every week with Randeep and myself as well. And Randeep, In the Booth is brought to you by Bells and Whistles.
Catch all the action, hockey, football, soccer, and more with Happy Hour Pints for $6.75, 3296 Fraser Street, just off Kingsway, right in the Fraser Hood. Bells and Whistles.
All right, let's get into the mailbag as you submitted plenty of questions for us to mull over in the wake of the Canucks' overtime victory over the Sharks on Thursday night and ahead of their Saturday afternoon matchup with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Again, another reminder, 4 o'clock faceoff from Rogers Arena on Saturday. The pregame show will get underway at 3 right here on Sportsnet 650. And we've got one from at JCOG88 on Twitter to begin the mailbag, Randeep. He says, should we hypothetically change the Expo Line SkyTrain station Patterson to Pedersen's? With Marcus Pedersen, Elias Pedersen, and Elias Pedersen now all on the Vancouver roster.
I love this question because this is near my hood. I used to go to Central Park as a kid, grew up in the area on the Vancouver side. I don't know the history of the Patterson SkyTrain station, I'll be honest with you.
Like, you don't know if it's named after somebody?
Obviously, it's named after somebody. It's Patterson Street there as well. But I'm for it. I'm for it. 3 Pedersens. And why not? Hey, Marcus Pedersen, welcome to Vancouver. You've got a SkyTrain station named after your likeness.
No pressure. You've signed your 6-year extension.
And not only you, but like, you know.
That's true. It's shared pressure. That's true. We're going to get to a lot of conversation around one of the other Pedersens, Elias Pedersen, coming up because we got tons of questions about him in the mailbag. But this one, you know, maybe it applies to Elias Pedersen, maybe it doesn't. At Snowstar444 on Twitter asks, where are we going to find forwards who can finish? And what do we have to give up to get them? And interesting question, because this is a team that has struggled to score at times this year. At the same time, there's a little bit of recency bias to that question because they have had some really good secondary scoring from the likes of Pew Suter, who's got 14 goals this year. Kiefer Sherwood's got 13 goals. Connor Garland, 14 goals, on pace to be close to a career high for points this year. In spite of some of the noise around Brock Besser, he's still got 17 goals. Jake DeBrusk has 19 goals. So the scoring's been more spread out. They don't have anybody that looks like they're going to be a 100% guaranteed bona fide 30 goal scorer this year, but certainly through, you know, the recent stretch where there's been noise around the team and all sorts of speculation, and now JT Miller goes out the door, scoring is a valid question to ask about. And ultimately, it'll be interesting to see how much different this roster looks coming back for the Four Nations faceoff, how much different it looks after the March 7th trade deadline in terms of whether this management group makes moves in the short term to change the mix, whether that's Brock Besser going out, potentially Elias Pedersen going out, I guess. What are you bringing in? What does the forward group look like after that? But regardless of whether it's the same guys, regardless of whether there are new guys, there needs to be a more concerted effort to score more consistently, and they need to make it harder on other teams. And Rick Tocchet always talks about getting to the middle of the ice.
Absolutely. And I think if you look at external additions, you mentioned the Brock Besser, Elias Pettersson, elephant in the room on both of those conversations. I'm going to go slightly lower profile name, Carson Soucy, right? If Carson Soucy is at this point in time redundant within the Canucks lineup because Marcus Pettersson has been, brought in. He's been given an extension. You've got Derek Forbort, who's a very different type of player. And, of course, you have Quinn Hughes. Carson Soucy can be leveraged to add some maybe offensive punch, whether that's a middle six winger, maybe that's a player with some viability to move up and down the lineup. So that's one thing you can maybe look at externally to say, how do you leverage a defenseman? And if there's teams like Calgary's been rumored, or there's been other teams that have been linked, of course, Soucy has control of that situation. He's got an okay deal. But let's just say the return, if it's a forward, that might provide some offense. Now, internally, I think one name that hasn't been mentioned that could add a punch to this lineup is Dakota Joshua. This is a guy that's been injured. He's had to stay away for a certain time. Of course, scored a goal against San Jose. But he, as we know, he hasn't been up to speed as of yet. He's tried to ramp up, and then he got out of the lineup again. So to have him back at full strength, hitting his stride, is going to be like one of those comments. You hear coaches say it all the time. Oh, like a trade deadline pickup. I think Dakota Joshua, when he is up to his standard, he will add more goals to this lineup. It's just a matter of getting him enough games where he's feeling comfortable.
And he's trending in that direction for sure, especially coming off the goal against San Jose. And it'll be interesting to see if he's able to build his confidence and grow his game coming out of the Four Nations face-off break as well. The other thing I think we have to talk about with scoring is ultimately, we can laud Pugh Suter, Kiefer Sherwood, the potential for Dakota Joshua. That's all secondary scoring. Secondary scoring doesn't matter if you don't have top line scoring. And this is where the conversation is going to shift to Elias Pettersson, who we heard from many of you about. And let's start with @SeanBean_90 on Twitter, who says, "Why would a hockey player be so gun-shy on the power play? I've never seen a player be so gun-shy on the man advantage more than Pettersson. How do you explain it? Is he hurt? What is going on?" And ultimately, we don't really know in terms of any sort of physical ailments. Patrick Alvin was asked about this when he was on with the guys on Canucks Central before the game against the Sharks on Thursday. And if you missed that interview, go back and catch it on the podcast. But he didn't want to give Pettersson any excuses when they asked him about it. He essentially said, he missed a few games around Christmas with an upper body injury. Other than that, he's been good enough to play every game. And the subtext to that, at least from my perspective, is if you're in the lineup, we have high expectations of you. Alvin has already said that he expects more of Pettersson than any other player on the team. So could there be a nagging injury? I guess it's possible, but it's nothing the Canucks want to give him a pass on. And I wonder if it's more confidence than anything else, because we've seen Elias Pettersson have these up and down stretches in his career. And in particular, to the question about the power play, when he's not confident, he overhandles the puck, and he does it on the power play. And there are shooting opportunities that he passes up because he feels the puck a little bit too much and doesn't just grip it and rip it, which we've all seen him do when he's a confident player.
Well, he's not playing on instinct. He's playing on, thinking right now. And when that happens in any profession, whether it's broadcasting, whether it's high-level sports, the more you think, the more you're going to not be able to execute. And I think with that, with Elias Pettersson right now, a couple of things. You're right. He's not in a position where he's reacting. He's thinking about things. He's overthinking it. But, Batch, this also comes back down to he's not moving his feet. And even on the power play, we sometimes think, of course, you got the man advantage. You don't necessarily, in the offensive zone, you don't have to move your feet. You have to constantly be moving. You have to change up the shooting angle. You have to, when you're going in for retrievals, if the PK senses that you're not confident or you're bobbling the puck, they're going to be on you right away. And listen, San Jose's got a terrible penalty kill over the last 15 games, 62%. But anytime Pettersson was in the corner trying to retrieve a puck, they were on him right away because they know he's not confident right now. And if you're not skating, if you're gliding, you're an easy target. So I think with Elias Pettersson, confidence for sure. But if in this league, if you're not moving your feet, if you're able to have, you know, if you're not backing up defenders, they're going to jump on you and they're going to take the puck away. And with Pettersson, he's got to move his feet, Batch. And that's the one of the biggest things I see right now is that there's too much glide in his game.
Well, and we see how big of an impact both Drew O'Connor and Filip Hedl have been able to have with the speed that they use to force defenders to make decisions. And ultimately, you're right. You're making it too easy on defenders if you're not attacking them with speed. If you just stand there and overhandle the puck and try to wait for an opening, defenders will close you down. You won't have those opportunities to get into scoring areas. And ultimately, we've seen Pettersson then not be confident with the plays that he does make. And that usually turns into a turnover. And any sort of scoring chance you might have been able to generate goes by the wayside. So, you know, I don't think that can be down to an injury. And again, maybe there's more to this story than we know. But if Patrick Alvin isn't going to sit there and say, yeah, you know, he's fighting through something and it's been really tough for him to try and ease some of the pressure on his player, then it means that Patrick Alvin doesn't think that any potential physical ailment with Elias Pettersson is what's limiting his game. It might be more between the ears at this point.
Yeah, potentially. And listen, this has been a conversation in this town for about 2 years now, where it goes back to the playoffs even before that. And at the time of recording, if we go exactly 1 year to the day and look at how many games have been played by Elias Pettersson and his production, it's 80 games and it's 58 points. Over almost a full season, he's been a 60-point player. And if you compare that to the captain of the team, who also played 80 games in that same stretch, it's 89 points for Quinn Hughes. So Quinn Hughes is playing all-world hockey right now, but Elias Pettersson can't be in the 58-point range. You simply can't when you're making that type of money, and this team needs you to be a 1C. So you're right, could be between the ears, but this is a situation where the Canucks do need a resolution. They need somebody, you know, in this situation to step up and start playing their game. And for Elias Pettersson too, there's only one way to get away from the pressure, and it's by delivering. Yeah, you gotta make sure that you execute on the ice, and it's just not happening right now.
Well, and if you look at where he's on pace to finish this season based on his production and, you know, accounting for games missed and things like that, right now on pace to finish the year playing 76 games, because he missed the six with the upper body injury that Alvin talked about, on pace for 17 goals and 52 points. That's just not good enough for a guy that is being paid like one of the best centermen in the NHL. And, you know, ultimately, I guess we'll see how things play out, because we've got plenty more questions about Pettersson here in from the listeners. Let's see, where we're going next. At Dombrova 22, when are they trading $11.6 million superstar Elias Pettersson? And, you know, I'll be interested to see, first of all, how the Four Nations go for Pettersson, whether he can trend in the right direction, whether he's doing some of the things behind the scenes that the organization needs to see from him to feel confident, because at this point, he's not going to salvage this year in terms of a production standpoint, right? Like, it's not like he's going to go off for 70 points here in the final 30 games. So this is going to finish as a down year offensively for Elias Pettersson. But the questions are, does he show the habits off the ice, behind the scenes, in practice that the team need to see to feel confident to keep him? And can he drive play, right? Like, I think it's play driving more than anything else. And this is something we've been talking about with Pettersson since the offseason, Randy. I can remember us having this conversation on maybe our very first or one of our first episodes of the year, that line has to be able to drive play. Pettersson has to be able to drive play. And that is even more amplified now by the fact that JT Miller's gone and he's essentially your top line center, although Filip Hedl's been deployed like it and played like it through his first three games as a Canuck.
And that's not a new conversation to your point, Batch. We've been talking about it for some time, where you need to win your matchups. You need to be in a situation where you're getting the best out of when you're on the ice. And whether that's a soft matchup, whether that's a, you know, a head-to-head, you're playing the big dogs. You know, the San Jose game, some real telling statistics to come out of that, and none more than this one. Jake DeBrusk, Elias Pettersson, Connor Garland, 7 minutes and 25 seconds of 5-on-5 ice time in that game. And they had two shot attempts and one against. That is it. The only line that was not in double digits, four shot attempts. And when you are the top line, forget driving play. You might have zone time, but are you able to dictate the game? Are you able to initiate? Are you able to get to the middle of the ice? And that is a real, you know, startling number. And it's only one game right now, but the production hasn't been there in more than one game. So this is probably the most extreme we've seen that number. And here's the thing. Before the JT Miller deal, it used to be the conversation of, hey, 1-2 punch, right? You've got 2 1-Cs potentially. Over time, it balances itself out. Both of these guys are high-level players. You don't have that anymore now. You need a 1C, and you need that to be Elias Pettersson. So you're right. You know, the question going back to if there's going to be a trade, when will there be a trade? The Canucks need a 1C right now. And Elias Pettersson, they're going to give runway here, I would assume, to show what he can do. But with every game, you're being assessed, you're being graded, and the grade is not great right now. So you have to turn it around. Otherwise, I think those conversations are only going to get louder, Batch.
They certainly are, based on the fact that multiple people asked us the question, why won't Petey shoot in terms of the mailbag? And so we're not going to get to all of the Pettersson questions, because there were like 95% Pettersson questions and 5% everything else. I think we've talked sufficiently about Elias Pettersson. Sure. We all know what he has to do. We all know where his game needs to trend. And we all know where things could head if they don't trend in the right direction. And that's going to be interesting to see in terms of the possibility, I guess, that Elias Pettersson might not be a member of the Canucks coming out of the Four Nations faceoff. And again, I'm not trying to report anything or break any news, but you know, this is a team that has started to trend well, but Elias Pettersson as an individual is not one of the guys helping to drive that bus. Our next question in from Brian, who writes us in all the time. Thanks for the question, as always, Brian. Although this one is coming from Brian's mom.
All right.
He says, my mom wants to know how well the team unity and chemistry is getting with each passing game, i.e. protecting each other in scuffles, getting to know each other's styles on the ice. How much better can the Canucks be as they get more synergized as a team since the trades? And you know, I think the San Jose game felt like a bit of a step back in comparison to how well they played against Colorado and even against Detroit. And that's ultimately, like, if we look at things from a process standpoint, I thought they were better against the Red Wings and lost that game in overtime than they were against the Sharks and won that game in overtime. So sometimes the process and the results don't align, although I think the Canucks are probably full value for the, you know, what is it, I guess, 5 points out of a possible 6 in the 3 games that they've played since they got the new guys into the lineup. But just being around practice, being around the rink a little bit, being in the room, it does feel like there's been a weight lifted off these guys' shoulders. And if they continue to have success and build on these results, if they can beat the Maple Leafs on Saturday and head into the Four Nations faceoff break in a playoff spot, in control of their own destiny in that regard, I think that goes a long way in terms of a lot of those off-ice chemistry, synergy, those sorts of things. And you would hope anyway that those only get better as these new players and new line mates and new situations become more familiar for everyone.
It certainly feels lighter around the team in terms of the locker room when you're walking in there, Batch, and we're going post-practice, you know, having a conversation with the guys or just getting a sense. Anytime you insert some new personalities into the room, you know, guys kind of loosen up a little bit, and especially with everything this team has had to go through. Going back to Brian's mom's question, and first of all, thank you, Brian's mom, for sending in the question. Really, you know, synergized in that. You've really upped the vocabulary on this show.
To know that family members listen to this show and talk it. About it together as well. It's a family affair here on In the Booth.
And protecting each other in scuffles and getting to know each other's styles on the ice. So that protecting each other in scuffles in the last two games has definitely been something that's noticeable. Against Colorado, we saw that when Linus Karlsson got, you know, that spear, whatever you want to call it. The officials didn't call it that, but me and Batch did.
Yeah.
You know, that was Nils Höglander leaning in. Elias Pettersson when Connor Garland got dumped. Like, there is a pack mentality, even against San Jose, where Nils Åman, who is usually the most understated guy on the ice, he doesn't play a huge game, but he was throwing the body around a little bit as well. He was initiating Teddy Bluger. So it does feel like there's a little bit more of a pack mentality there, which is always good. When guys are standing up for each other, when they're standing up for players they don't even really know because they've only played a couple of games together, that's a good sign. And we'll see if it continues. But I think every player understanding that there's nobody out there, there's no, you know, Matthew Olivier on this team that's going to chuck him. There's no Ryan Reeves that's going to jump over the boards. You kind of have to be accountable together. I've started to see that here in the last two or three games.
Next question from Ryan on Twitter, who writes in and asks, why do the Canucks make hockey look harder than it needs to be against the bottom dwellers? And obviously, this is a question that's coming in the wake of that San Jose game. But there have been times this year where, you know, the Canucks, I don't know if I want to say they've played down to their competition. I think the thing that stands out more to me is that, and again, most of, if not all of these examples are prior to the JT Miller trade. So we're talking about a different team for the most part. But some of the games where you would have liked big emotional responses, it hasn't been there, right? They lost to New Jersey on home ice in a lopsided game when Quinn Hughes gets a chance to play his brothers. Dakota Joshua's first game back after his cancer diagnosis, they laid an egg in that one too. And you know, you can look at the San Jose game and say, and we talked about it going into the game, it's not a must-win game, but it's a you really should be winning this if you want to make the playoffs against the dead last team in the NHL. And ultimately, they got the job done. So at the end of the day, you're not going to ask how, you're going to ask how many. But at the same time, this is Vancouver. So let's be honest, you're also going to ask how. And, you know, that is a game that had the Canucks played like they did against the Avalanche earlier in the week, they would have romped to a lopsided victory over a San Jose club that isn't very good, even though they've got a lot of young talent. But the Canucks seem content to play to the outside, to not go to some of those hard areas, and ultimately they get the power play goal from Joshua, they get the penalty shot goal in overtime from O'Connor, and they win the game. But there, you know, there was some regression to some of those trends we've seen for this team where they weren't willing to go to some of those hard areas, I felt anyway.
Well, early on in this game, especially the opening four or five shifts, they were solid. You know, against San Jose, they played really well. They get a couple of power plays, and that actually takes away momentum. The fact that the power play was looking, I don't want to say unorganized, just not confident, right? You had deferring back to the point, and Filip Hronek got some shots through. He hit a post, but there was not much creativity there. And maybe that's an Elias Pettersson conversation. Maybe that's a conversation of the other forwards not getting to the middle of the ice. And so I thought in the most recent Canucks game, you had the process was good to start off this game. And if they score on one of those power plays, Batch, we might be talking about a lopsided victory. But how are you supposed to, you know, create offense, create some creativity, some assertiveness without Quinn Hughes in the lineup? He's kind of your cheat code where nothing is going on the power play, nothing is going on 5-on-5, and you can just say, hey, Quinn, here's the puck. Do what you do. Freestyle. And Filip Hedl's actually brought a little bit about that as well. But on the power play, they're still looking for that X factor. When Quinn's not on the ice, how do you build on the momentum you've created 5-on-5? I thought against San Jose, they looked really strong, especially that Hedl line. You draw a penalty, and then that power play just sucks it away. So, you know, of course, they played down. I think the rest of the game was pretty disappointing from an energy level. But I felt that power play actually sapped out the energy of this game.
Yeah, well, and that's something we have to remember here, too, is these are games that they've played without Quinn Hughes. We haven't seen what this team looks like with the newly constructed blue line and Quinn Hughes in the lineup. Marcus Pettersson and Quinn Hughes haven't played a game together yet, and we'll see what happens going forward. But, you know, it's so interesting about the power play. And David writes in and asks a question, why is the power play a constant struggle regardless of who the coach is? And this is one of those things where perception does not always equal reality, because going into that game against the Sharks, the Canucks were 5-for-16 on the power play in their last five games. So that's 31.3%. So actually, you look at that and you say, okay, the power play has been clicking pretty good lately. And although it looked frustrating at times in the game against San Jose, they got a power play goal from Dakota Joshua. So, you know, as much as I think the process looks frustrating sometimes, they have been scoring pretty well of late on that man advantage. And going into the game against San Jose as well, they were, what were they, 14th in the league on the power play? So not quite as high as you would like to be, but very close to pushing themselves into that top 10. And especially with new pieces. It's going to take a little bit of time. As you mentioned, Hughes is out of the lineup, but we saw Pettersson was on the top power play unit, then he was off it, then he was back on it again. They're putting Hedl in there, and he's trying to figure out how he fits in with that group. So, you know, there are a lot of moving parts, but at the end of the day, they are actually scoring power play goals at a pretty good rate right now.
For sure they are, and I think one of the things that we just got to watch out for this team is that, of course, overall the number doesn't look, you know, all that bad, right? But you still say middle of the pack. And with JT Miller no longer on this team, I think it's a fair question to say, do you have enough game breakers? Philip Hedl has shown that he's got the speed. He might be able to fill that role to a certain extent. Quinn Hughes, when he's healthy, we know he's that player. Elias Pettersson has dropped off. He hasn't been that game breaker. And to me, that says the power play has to be that much more important. To your point, sure, in the last little bit, they haven't been all that bad, actually. They've been pretty good. But I think now with the Miller trade, the power play's importance is actually going to rise on this team. It's going to be even more significant because they're going to require the man advantage. Like, that might be a way that you win games. And it's not the healthiest way to win games, Batch. But when you take a game breaker off the roster, that man advantage is going to be important in games where you're saying it could be the deciding factor if it's a one-goal game.
Our next question comes from Canucks Propaganda Machine on Blue All Sky, right, who writes in and asks, do you think if the Canucks chase a true setup man like Marner in the offseason, it will jumpstart Elias Pettersson again? And I take issue with this question because I think we talk way too much about who Pettersson plays with and not enough about Pettersson performing at a high level in and of his own accord, because he's making $11.6 million now. You should be the driver on a line. You shouldn't need someone else to do it for you, being paid at that level and being asked to perform at that level. And I think prior to this season, you know, at times there were some legitimate conversations about who do they have to play with him, right? He spent so much of last season with Ilya Mikheyev, Nils Höglander, Andrei Kuzmenko before he was traded. This year they got him some guys, and he's been given opportunity to play up the lineup with the likes of Jake DeBrusk, with the likes of Brock Besser, and it still hasn't solved things. So I'm not entirely convinced that if you went and found a way to sign Mitch Marner in free agency and put him with Pettersson, if that's going to change much for Elias Pettersson. I think Mitch Marner would probably do a pretty good job of producing, because that's what Mitch Marner does. He's a really good player and a really skilled player in this league, and Pettersson might see some knock-on effect from that. But ultimately, you know, you could have Wayne Gretzky and Mario Lemieux on his wings, and if Elias Pettersson's playing like this, it's still not going to be good enough.
Well, we also have to understand what kind of player Elias Pettersson is when he's clicking, when he's going. He is not a Patrick Laine where he's going to hang out in one spot and just fire pucks. He likes the puck on his stick. He likes to initiate. He's a pass-first guy. As much as we talk about his shot, he likes to play playmaker. He might, you know, so this whole idea about putting a playmaker next to him and setting up and teaming up for one-timers, what's one of his issues right now?
He doesn't shoot.
Exactly. So if you put a playmaker who's teeing him up, is he going to pull the trigger? Because, Batch, on the power play, he's got opportunities, and there's the double clutch. And, you know, the pass may be not perfect for a one-timer. And so I don't necessarily agree with that logic. I think he's a pass-first guy to begin with. Even when he entered this league, he's got a heck of a shot. But this is a guy that likes to play playmaker and pick his spots when he's scoring. We're not seeing either of that right now.
So if anything, it might make more sense to find him a trigger man and someone that is going to shoot the puck and is going to throw it to the net and is not going to be afraid to take those shots for a couple of reasons. One, because Pettersson can play the setup man and that'll help him produce. But two, we've already talked about, like, oh, Hedl and O'Connor coming in, they move their feet. Maybe that'll rub off on the rest of their teammates. If you got a guy that shoots the puck whenever he gets it and scores goals as a result, Pettersson's going to look at that and go, huh, maybe I should try doing that. And that could potentially get him back to being the kind of player that we've seen in the past.
But here's the thing I also think. The Goldilocks complex of everything just being just right doesn't work in the NHL when you're a star player. Go ask Sidney Crosby, the wingers that he's played with over the years, right? And sure, Chris Kunitz was an excellent player for the Pittsburgh Penguins. Was he anything before he got to Pittsburgh as far as playing at that level? No. Great players elevate their wingers, and that's the expectation with Elias Pettersson. So this whole idea of too cold, too warm, just right, you can't have that as a
top line player in the NHL who is paid a certain way. And the expectation from Patrick Alvin is as such. That's why when he says, hey, we need him to, you know, be prepared and they have high expectations for him, it's you're getting to play with Jake DeBrusk, who's on track for 29 goals as of right now. You're playing with Brock Besser, who's having an off year compared to last year where he scored 40 goals, but he's still trending towards around, you know, 28, 29 goals. He's in that range. These guys can score. You got to elevate your game. And if you elevate your game, whoever's playing next to you is going to be a better player as well.
It doesn't matter if it's too hot, too cold, or just right. You got to be able to produce in all situations, in all scenarios when you're being paid like
you
that.
You got to eat like Goldilocks. Doesn't matter if it's warm, just right, or too hot. Elias Pettersson has to eat too.
Next question in from at G Surrey Canucks on Twitter. Is there a reason Rick Tocchet isn't signed to an extension for next season? Yes, in short, there is. The team has an option on next year. So Rick Tocchet is not outside of team control beyond this year. They can activate that option, and Rick Tocchet then theoretically would be back as the head coach of this team next year. Although Patrick Alvin, when asked about it, said, well, that's a two-way street, which any situation like that is going to be. And, you know, that'll be an interesting thing to see if it plays out in terms of, you know, because of all the noise, because of all the distractions, because of all the struggles this year, what does Rick Tocchet think about this situation? What does he think about this program moving forward and his potential to continue to be a part of it or not? But ultimately, the team has an option. They can activate that option and bring Rick Tocchet back next year, so they don't need to have him signed to an extension right now.
No, they don't. But as we know, heading into next year, every coach loves to have an extension in place.
And right? Rick Tocchet, let's be honest, I know he receives a lot of criticism on social media and from the fan base, but he won the Jack Adams last year. And I think we're seeing, based on the way this team has played over the last few games, and again, small sample size, so we don't want to make any sweeping conclusions, but it's been my opinion all along that the Canucks' struggles this year have been more about the players on the ice and less about the guy behind the bench. So I think Tocchet absolutely deserves an extension, and I could totally understand why he would want one rather than just a team option being activated, because he's rightly recognized as one of the top coaches in the league, and I'm sure there are plenty of other teams that we'd be waiting in line to snap him up if he moved on from Vancouver one way or another.
Well, Quinn Hughes has already said he's the best coach he's ever had, right? And that's a credit to what Rick Tocchet not only teaches, but his communication skills with the team. Now, moving forward, of course, in Vancouver, it's going to be a conversation point, just like it was a conversation point for Travis Green, who's a good friend of Rick Tocchet's. Remember when essentially you had players going out and saying, hey, yeah, we like Travis Green, and it happened with Ian Clark as well. So this will be a conversation point in Vancouver. But I think, you know, the fact that the team does have a team option with the coach, it tells you that they have some time to play with here as well, where doesn't have to be a conversation right now. It can be one heading in the next season, because if you're the team, you feel as though you still have a year. And if you're going to discuss extension, maybe you do it in the offseason. Maybe you're saying, all right, we got you anyways. Let's talk about this in the offseason. And also, remember, there's alignment within this organization. Rick Tocchet is a Alvin Rutherford guy through and through. So Alvin and Rutherford are trying to do their thing right now. They're trying to secure not only the short term, but the medium term health of this organization, and the long term, I should mention, too, with Quinn Hughes. So if you're Rick Tocchet, and if you're the management team, you might say, all right, let's chat about this in a little bit. But right now, we want to solidify that foundation.
Time for a couple more questions here. Let's go to Princess Erica on Twitter. Do you think Hughes will have some level of, say, effect on management choosing to re-sign Besser or not? Hughes being a Canuck forever is a priority, and trading away Miller and Besser and potentially Petey too, two of the four guys that he's been with since day one moving out may not sit well, and I guess potentially three if Pettersson gets traded too. First of all, first part of the question, I think absolutely management will be consulting Quinn Hughes for his thoughts. That's not to say that they're going to let him make the decisions, but he's their captain. They're going to want his opinion. I'm sure they've been talking to him throughout the saga that saw JT Miller moved on. I'm sure they're going to be talking to him if they're looking at trading Elias Pettersson. I'm sure they're going to be talking to him if they're looking at trading Brock Besser. The second part of the question about Hughes potentially not being happy if all of the guys around him are traded. And my response to that is, with the way things have gone this year, what if Hughes believes that change is necessary? And he's never going to say that publicly, and he's never going to throw his teammates under the bus, but what if he looks at this core group and wonders, like the rest of us on the outside, if they can accomplish what ultimately they set out to do and what we thought they might be able to do based on their playoff run last year, which is to be a Stanley Cup contender and ultimately win the Stanley Cup one day. You know, I can't imagine that Quinn Hughes looks at this group and goes, oh, I'm sure Pettersson will be 100% fine, or, you know, sign Besser to whatever money he wants or whatever term he wants because he's that important of a player for us. I could be wrong. Maybe he does want his buddies to stay. But the one thing I think we know is that Quinn Hughes probably wants to win more than anything else. And if he can see the vision from management in terms of moving those guys out and the pieces they're bringing in and how they're trying to retool this team, I can't see him being opposed to something that might ultimately make the team better.
Yeah, with Quinn Hughes, and I think the conversation with Ian McIntyre a few weeks ago was a telling one, where he is very critical of himself as well. And that's what you want in a leader, to say, hey, if I'm willing to look at myself and I'm looking at my leadership skills and how I can improve, you better believe anybody out there in the organization, he's going to probably have a pretty sober look at and to say, hey, he's my friend, but can we upgrade here? Or, you know, is there an opportunity to be a better team? I think if any player wants to win, of course, you have your thoughts, you share your points of view. So this whole idea of, you know, would he get, you know, ticked off if, you know, some of his friends or whatever dealt, we don't know the answer to that. But Quinn Hughes wants to win. You see it in his demeanor. You see it in his want on the ice, the way he's able to will his team. And if there's any way to get closer to a Stanley Cup playoff success in this city, I feel like, you know, as long as you make a solid case in front of him, and there's a winning case, I think that's the most important thing, Batch. So the whole Brock Besser thing, like, I think it's a valid argument to ask, if you let him go, are there better scorers on the market, whether that's the trade market or the free agent market? Like, I can hear that conversation. I think it's going to be tough to replace him. But if you made a case and you brought a goal scorer that's close to being a 30, 35, 40 goal scorer, and that gets closer, Vancouver, closer to a Stanley Cup, I think the captain and really anybody in the organization would be at least open to hearing about a player and open to at least exploring other options, because it brings you closer to playoff success.
And our final question on this week's show comes from Woodrow, the eligible bachelor, who writes in and asks, what's your go-to order at Bells and Whistles? I'm going to go with the California Club. I love it. It's got a really nice lemon aioli. You mix in the yam fries with the chipotle aioli that you can dip it in. It's great. I can't recommend it enough. It might be like a basic kind of order, but it's so good. I can't recommend it highly enough.
All right. I'm going to go with, if you've seen me in life, you know I like a good burger or two. But
don't we all, Randy?
I'm a vegetarian, but they do all burgers awesome, and they have a chopped cheese. And they make that vegetarian with, I believe it's the Beyond Sausage, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, nice.
And it is my favorite burger. You get that with fries. It's a fantastic one. Also, Royale with cheese is dope, too. That's another one. So I get a few other ones. If I feel healthy, I'll go with the Club Med salad with a little falafel, which makes me feel like, all right, I'm trying to cut weight here, but a little bit of both. If you want to indulge and you want to treat yourself, go for the burger. If not, they got some awesome salads. They got a bunch of stuff there.
And that is a great note to finish up this week's show on, Randeep. Of course, you'll be on Hockey Night in Canada Punjabi on Saturday night. So I'll have the call with Landon Ferraro here on Sportsnet 650 of the Canucks and the Leafs. But what do you guys have on your show coming up?
We have the Leafs and Canucks as well. And the late game will be Seattle versus Calgary. And obviously Canucks fans will be interested in that one as well, as the Canucks are battling with Calgary for wild card 2.
And it'll be interesting to see if Vancouver can beat Toronto then. again, maybe they can extend their lead above the Flames heading into the Four Nations faceoff break if Calgary ultimately can't win later in the night. But that does it for this week's episode of In the Booth. Programming note, it's the Four Nations break. It's a break for us too, so we're going to be off the next couple of weeks. But we'll be back when the Canucks are back, and we'll talk to you soon right here on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.